Drive to Survive. Have you seen that documentary?
Yes.
Well, guess the first Australian you've seen that documentary, aside from Daniel Ricciardo, to my knowledge, and his family, is the great Matty White. It's a great Matty White. And you know what? He called the Big Bash last night. He'd be all across Bathurst. He'd be all across the F1. And I'm pleased to say the great man, who just keeps on keeping on, is on the line. G'day, Whitey.
Hello, boys. I didn't get an invoice in for that Drive to Survive. Darn it.
Okay, well,
you put one in now.
Just on invoices. Did you put in a full invoice for last night? It was a very quick game in the end.
It was over quickly, wasn't it? They just didn't have anything at all, the Melbourne Stars. So we were thinking of going the distance, and I reckon it was about over number five when the Stars came out. And in commentary, I said to Dougie Bollinger, you want to get on the phone, mate, and book us a table for dinner because we're going to be out of here really soon.
Well, because of the early mark, mate, did you get up the East Coast? Because you got property scattered all up the coast.
Yeah.
Where are you at today? Are you in Sydney? Are you, you're up on the property? You just got them all over the place.
I'm in Sydney, Finchie, and knowing that you were in my part of the world across the weekend, I spent most of Saturday dodging and weaving.
Yes.
And every time I look, you know, Sugar, you know, when you, like, say you buy yourself a yellow Ford Laser, right?
Yeah.
And you don't see any, but then you go and buy one, and you can't stop seeing them.
Beta Meinhof.
There you go. So here am I having a chat with Finchie and Adam on Saturday morning with the Mowers Club, and he said to me, "I'm going to come and find you later on." and you know what? I reckon I saw a Finchie lookalike over the top of the, you know, out the backyard.
Just a big
set of
teeth.
Down the road. He was at the hamburger shop. I did go to the pub, so every chance.
Definitely,
that was
me, that one.
So, just before we go, Matty, onto the Formula One and the Bathurst, which is I thought both were fantastic. The BBL last night, what were your takeaways?
My takeaways are that, Josh Philippi and James Vince just batted as good as you're going to see right there. And that the Sydney Sixers needed to make a bit of a statement last night. You know, they've got the pressure on them in a great way to become three-time back-to-back-to-back champions on that. So I did ask Dougie beforehand, I said, what do you got to do here to put out a bit of a statement to the league that you're obviously fair dinkum about it, but you're also not shying away, not falling off any form? Well, they did everything. They did everything that was asked for them in their innings, and their batting was just unbelievable. I mean, it was ridiculous how good Josh Philippi was hitting the ball.
So sweet.
I don't think he played a bad shot at all. So take away from that is the Sydney Sixers deserve to have the title favouritism. The Melbourne Stars takeaway, I don't even know where to start, Joel, because they were just, when they came out to bat, they were appalling. They just had nothing. They looked as though they didn't want to be there. Glenn Maxwell got out in a shot where the old keep the eyes on the ball was not at play for a bloke of his stature. His head was in the air. He just threw a loose bat at it, and bang, he was knocked over by Sean Abbott, and it was game over. So there needs to be a really big rethink at the Melbourne Stars. And in all seriousness, their coach, David Hussey, said to them before and made it very clear before. He said, look, I want our team to be bold. I want our batters to be bold. I want them to back themselves, work out when to play the power surge. They did none of that last night, so they're going to have to turn it around quickly.
Matty, in your opinion, and I watch plenty of BBL, I'm just trying to have a think, the closeness of games, is there as many close games as you thought there would have been because of that target team set? If they do bat well in the first innings, more often than not, you see a shocking second innings because the team collapses just through that, the scoreline. They're virtually beat before they go out. You know, they can't play their game. You know, they've got to go hard early, which can lead to mistakes. And obviously, the 50 overs down to 20 overs leaves no room to build your innings. Do you see big scorelines? Obviously, that was the biggest win in BBL history. But is there more close games, or would you expect more close games than there is?
I mean, you'd think so, yeah, and there probably will be. And it's just the nature of the beast, too. And it is, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts if you get out. If you lose a few wickets in the run chase, then you're always up against it. And you can almost feel the players starting to get tight. The interesting thing about that last night, Finchie, was that the Melbourne Stars didn't have to come out and go hard early because the two openers for the Sixers, Philippi and Vince, they actually didn't start with a bang. They got themselves into the innings. So when you're looking at the comparisons in the first three, four, five overs, the scores weren't that different. It wasn't until about over five or six that those two started to go in the Sydney Sixers blast. So just simply by losing wickets early, the Stars put themselves behind the eight ball and they didn't have the patience to try and see it through. So that's where the blowout happened last night.
Just some breaking news here, Matty, by the way, and you'll probably go into this in your program a bit more tomorrow, but Perth will not host the fifth test. Cricket Australia today confirms the fifth Vodafone Men's Ashes test match will not be relocated from Perth Stadium due to pandemic-related reasonings. And it goes on there. So maybe not a big surprise. They've made it very, very hard for themselves over there in Perth.
Oh, mate.
Haven't they? Mark McGowan's making a meal of it. But anyway, let's move on, Matty, to Bathurst. Now, obviously, you're preparing for the big bash with the call with Dougie. But did you get to see most of the Bathurst there?
Sure did. Yeah, sure did. And kept my eyes across it the whole way and caught up with a very, very dusty, Chaz Mostert and Lee Holdsworth this morning.
So. It looks a bit of a character. Both of them. Well, the new Mozzie, the haircut there with Chaz, it's like Chaz is a great name anyway, isn't it, really?
Just on that, Matty, and preparing the show, in this scenario, right, so you know they're going to be out there partying. How do you secure, you know, the booking of Mostert and Holdsworth after such a big victory?
Well, I left it in the hands of the exclusive producing department that we've got. You know, the vast array of producers and minions that I've got. So Tommy gave them a call. But look, we gave them a call. I think the key to that is knowing what they're in for this morning, because I've seen it firsthand and I've been with them after they win, whoever wins Bathurst. So it's. Whilst it's a long day and obviously a big night, they've got to get up early. They'll be up there. They've got the Peter Brock trophy. Every single brekkie show and TV brekkie show wants them. And then they hit the road and they come back to Sydney for the ultimate photo shoots down by the harbour, et cetera, et cetera. So I didn't know what kind of night they'd had, but I was betting that they had a good one because Mozzie knows how to party and Lee's been around long enough. The interesting thing was that Lee's meant to be the cool head. He's meant to be the calm hand. Well, he didn't sleep. So when I spoke, we did a pre-recorded interview just before my show started this morning. And when they jumped on the line, it was pretty ropey. So Chaz said to me, "Right, I got Lethal here. Oh, I'll chuck him on." And I went, this is going to be fun. And then Lethal was even worse. And I went, "Oh, you beauty."
So you can catch that, by the way, on the podcast of Matty White's show. So go and catch up on all of that if you like. What about the echidna and the amount of times that the race was forced back to, you know, like a safety car brought everyone back level pegging? Did that help or hinder anyone most particularly?
Well, it didn't hinder the echidna in the end, thankfully, because that wouldn't have been a really good sight. Is there anything more Australian than an echidna stopping a motorsport race at Mount Panorama?
No, there's not.
I mean, I know ScoMo did his best to hog the front page this morning and chuck on every bit of supercars paraphernalia he could and jump in a car and try and get as Aussie as you can. But, mate, you're outdone by an echidna and horribly outdone in the process. So, thankfully, everyone got through that. Look, I think the bottom line of what Chaz and Lee did yesterday, and I discussed this on the way into the race, but I've got to tell you, I was still picking Shane Van Gisbergen and Garth Tander to finish over the top of them and have the pace. But when you've got a super fast car, when you know that you've got the pace in that car, and they had absolute pace, he blew them away in the shootout lap, and they kept that pace going. What having that pace does is when things start to go wrong, when echidnas walk out on the track and they get safety cars, or like in Chaz's case, his tyre started to delaminate and he had to spear into pit lane. At that stage, he had about a 13-second gap, maybe more, and that gap gets evaporated. What having a fast car at Bathurst does, which sounds a bit silly because that's what they're all trying to get, but he had a really fast car. It allows you to absorb any troubles that you face. So with that tyre going, he had enough time to still get in, no dramas. Sure, he lost the lead of the race, but he knew he had the pace in the car to get it back. So put a new tyre on, send him back out there. And every time that the safety car pulls back the rest of the field, he knows that he's got the pace to pull away at the end. So at the end of the day, what happened yesterday was the fastest car with the two guys who worked that out and know how to get around the mountain won the race. And it's just as simple as that. Nobody could catch them for speed in the end.
Matty, just the terms of the drivers themselves, you've covered many sports. You know, you've seen rugby league players have, you know, the physical wear and tear and how mentally drained they are after a game. I couldn't imagine. Run us through the physical and mental, what they go through, 161 laps. I imagine the dehydration, you know, and this is concentrating, you know, that the speeds they'll be at, you know, flying around these corners and the clarity they have to have their thinking, that how they, the fitness they've got to keep their heart rate low. You know, you're making split second decisions where, you know, any lapse in judgment could end your life.
Yeah.
You know, how physically and mentally drained are these drivers at the end of a Bathurst completion of the race?
Yeah, a lot of them are stuffed, mate, to be brutally honest. And it will also depend on the various stages of the race. If you lose your power steering, for instance, there's no way you're going to get through 161 laps trying to muscle one of those things. I mean, those cars weigh almost a ton and a half. And the other thing is that the drivers over the years, Chas Mostert used to be quite a big sort of almost plumpy kind of guy, right? He's still obviously quite tall, but he's very, very lean. They drop a lot of weight because weight really starts to count in these cars now. So there's not a lot to these blokes. They're like jockeys these days. The other thing, it's a horrible working environment. If you sit in a supercar, it's just awful. Everything about it, you can't see properly because of the roll bars. You've got your head and neck safety device, which limits the amount of movement you've got with your head, so you can't really make much judgments. God knows how they know what's going on around them because you can't see left or right. And then if the heat factor starts to play in as well, you know, it all comes together, and it's an extraordinarily long day. And you're right too, mate, about the mental side of this, and Davey Reynolds is a really good reflection of that. He won in 2017, he went back up there in 2018, and he didn't factor in how much he would be pushed and pulled by everybody wanting a piece of the defending champion. And the bottom line was he was stuffed by the time he got in the car on Sunday, and it ruined him. He ended up with cramps and he couldn't go on and he lost the race. So there's all sort of factors that come into play. And then you've got to be alert for an echidna or two.
I tell you, the claustrophobia of that, I would absolutely hate that. What about the Formula One in Saudi Arabia? It's game on now. Hamilton tied with Verstappen, and this real battle, it's very tense between the pair. I don't think they like each other too much, Matty.
No, and the teams don't like each other either. So they don't mess around in Formula One with that. There's no Christmas cards and roses. If you're fighting somebody in Formula One, it's to the death. And I think this one going to Abu Dhabi is exactly the way that I thought it was going to go. Over the last three races, Hamilton starts to get momentum. Max Verstappen, he's still there, obviously. But now Lewis Hamilton, 7 world titles. Mercedes will be absolutely ruthless. They know how to play a team game. And they'll try and force an error for Max Verstappen. Because when you drive the way that Max does, with the backing of the Red Bull team that he's got, you're more than likely going to get an error out of him by pushing him. And then we saw that in qualifying or in practice when he ended up in the wall. So Max Verstappen starting to make a few little mistakes that could well cost him the championship. They're equal on points for the last race of the year. If they take each other out and they both don't finish, Verstappen will win because he's won more races this year.
I can see where you're going there. Well, just on that, Matty, what role does Bottas playing all of this? Like, is he under riding instructions from Team Mercedes to, you know, to keep an eye on Verstappen? Is that how it plays out?
Yes, he plays the role of whatever Toto Wolff who's in charge.
Yes. Take him out.
Lewis. Yeah, well, and the thing, he's moving on next year. So this could be Valtteri's, you know, swan song. He might leave. And the rewards are massive. You know, the rewards are very, very high to winning a world championship. So he'll do whatever Mercedes want him to do. I don't think they're going to go taking people out, but the extraordinary thing about motorsport, and especially F1, is that those two, Hamilton and Verstappen, will end up alongside each other. They're not going to be on opposite paths here when they get to the end race of the year. So there's more likelihood of something happening by virtue of the fact they're 1-1 in the championship now, and they will end up alongside each other. Two fastest cars out there, two hungriest drivers out there, and they could well and truly sort this out themselves. He might not need a help of a Valtteri Bottas, Lewis, and Sergio Perez might not need to play a part for Max Verstappen. It'll be high drama.
So, Matty, just on that, so has Bottas left to be number one? If so, where's he gone? And who's filling the seat of the vacated seat of Bottas?
Well, Valtteri Bottas, so George Williams is going to come in.
Yes.
And he,
after he got
been
brushed from the Raiders, he's now jumping in. That's a good decision to leave the Raiders and Sticky. My thanks, Sticky, for cutting him last year, Georgie.
Mate, it's not a bad call.
Jeez. Talented man.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, he's going to go to Alfa Romeo. So Valtteri Bottas goes over there. We've got a few retirements, of course, and a couple of people going. But George Williams is the next big thing for you. Just love that, Finchie. Yeah. For Merck, he's been on their program for a while. He's currently out there in the system already, so they'll just move him across. And Valtteri's done the job. He's done the job that Rubens Barrichello did for years to Michael Schumacher. Play that second fiddle. You know you're going to get race wins, but do what we ask you to do.
Matty, we're looking at the team photo there after it with obviously the two drivers, the Mercedes teams, obviously they're first and third. The two drivers and all the staff. Now this, you know, this is an army of people, you know, that travel around the world. You know, we're not just talking inside Australia, around the world. It must cost a fortune for these teams, not only how expensive the cars are, but, you know, flights, accommodation, you know, travel to and from airports, just the whole production must be just an extravagant, you know, cost, but also a logistical nightmare on occasions.
Well, then you've got to sign a check for your driver too. And in Merck's case, you're signing $150, $200 million for Lewis Hamilton. So the costs are off the charts. And until you really get in, I mean, the TV cameras these days, now we have more access than we really did, well, we ever did really under Bernie Eccleston. It's just changed sport. And Joel, you mentioned Drive to Survive there. Mm. That's part of it. Give us an insight. So until you can spend a lot of time in and around a Formula One paddock and a garage and see what happens behind the scenes, just down to the nth degree. These guys don't do anything that doesn't cost a lot of money or involve a lot of engineering. And here's a really basic case in point. When masks started to become mandatory because of COVID, you know, we all went down the shop and we grabbed a blue one or a white one or a black one, whatever we could find. It was like there was an arms race in Formula One to engineer who could come up with the best looking masks with, you know, with the finest looking logo on it, and probably which one the driver could walk down the paddock and get an aerodynamic advantage out of. That's the kind of silly degree that these guys go to when it comes to competition. The engineering level is extraordinary. It's NASA stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, Matty, enjoy your final show of the year tomorrow in the morning. So we're looking forward to that. And, of course, we'll hear your dulcet tones on the BBL coverage anyway.
Will do. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Matty.